Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 276, an update on the CDU funding scandal. This is a direct follow-up to For the Record program number 193, and also overlaps with programs numbered 245, 275, and also number 278 or 9. I haven't decided which. That'll be Connecting the Dots Part 2, in which many of the areas of overlap between this and other broadcasts are going to be reviewed in the interest of clarity for listeners who may be whose heads may be spinning at this point. Now, we're going to begin with an excerpt from For the Record program number 245, titled Deutsche Telekom über alles. And by the way, this is being recorded on February 18th of the year 2001. Again, this article, this excerpt, I should say, is from For the Record program number 245, Deutsche Telekom über alles. And one of the main names to note here is that of Matthias Wismann, who is a partner with Wilmer, Cutler & Pickering, and also, for the purposes of this broadcast, should be noted to be the treasurer of the CDU, the Christian Democratic Union, the party of Helmut Kohl, his chief of staff, Günter Strassmeier, the architect of German reunification, whose son Andreas was, according to an ATF informant who passed a polygraph examination, the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. Here is an excerpt from For the Record program number 245. It's also worth taking a noting here what law firm is being selected by Deutsche Telekom to lobby its position in Washington. This is from the Wall Street Journal of Friday, July 21st of the year 2000. This is an article by Wall Street Journal staff reporters William Boston in Bonn and Jill Carroll in Washington. It's headlined, Deutsche Telekom Lobbies But Mildly in Washington. And skipping down, only recently did the company hire a law firm with the swagger to open doors in D.C., signing up Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering to represent it. Skipping down, Mr. Zomer has said of this, the purchase of VoiceStream, we are not coming as invaders, he said in a telephone interview yesterday. I would say that is open to debate. And skipping down again, Democratic Senator Ernest F. Hollings of South Carolina is urging the Federal Communications Commission to block any acquisition by Deutsche Telekom, which he calls, quote, a monopoly owned by the German government that operates from a protected home market, unquote. And skipping down again, if Deutsche Telekom is biding its time, the same can't be said for the German government. Alerted by a stern warning letter from the German ambassador in Washington last week, senior German foreign ministry and economics ministry officials have had talks about the Hollings letter and Deutsche Telekom with their counterparts at the State Department and the FCC, according to Berlin officials. Now, note again that the law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has been signed to handle the lobbying for Deutsche Telekom's position in Washington. We spoke about Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering in For the Record program number 139, and Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering in turn had signed a German government minister as a partner, and Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has been involved in some very interesting activities indeed. That former German transport minister is named Matthias Wismann, and we're going to excerpt For the Record program number 139 in order to hear more not only about Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering and its signing on a former German cabinet minister as a partner, but also some of the previous cases that Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has handled on behalf of German industry. This again is excerpted from For the Record program number 139. Again, this from the Financial Times of London of 3-2-1999. This is an article headlined, Wismann Joins Washington Firm. Matthias Wismann, W-I-S-S-M-A-N-N, the treasurer of Germany's CDU opposition party and a former transport minister, has become a partner of the Washington law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, in one of the most dramatic attempts yet by U.S. lawyers to export their regulatory expertise to Europe. The firm is best known in Europe for its role in representing the Swiss banks when they were sued in the U.S. over their alleged confiscation of assets belonging to Holocaust survivors. It is now working for several German companies being sued over their use of slave labor during the Second World War. By the way, the CDU party is the party that was in power for some 16 years. Helmut Kohl is a member of the CDU-CSU coalition. And so please note this is a very, very significant figure for Wilmer Cutler and Pickering to be taking on. And again, he's a former transport minister of Germany. And note that this company is now working for several German, this law firm, I should say, is now working for several German companies being sued over their use of slave labor during the Second World War. Skipping down, senior lawyers at Wilmer Cutler believe it, beginning again, senior lawyers at Wilmer Cutler make it clear they believe Europe could be a big market for them, pointing to the lead that Brussels is already taking in privacy issues and to the difficulty some U.S. mergers have had in gaining EU clearance. That again is excerpted from For the Record program number 139 from the early spring of 1999. So note again the role of Matthias Wissmann as a partner with Wilmer Cutler and Pickering, and the fact that that firm had handled lawsuits against Swiss banks for confiscating assets of Holocaust victims. Many of those Swiss banks tied in with the Bormann Group, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts. They also are handling the slave labor lawsuits for several major German corporations. That again excerpted from For the Record 245, and in turn it contained an excerpt of number 139. Now, again, note that Matthias Wissmann, who is wearing many different hats, including a lobbyist for Deutsche Telekom, for Wilmer Cutler and Pickering, with the involvements both on behalf of Swiss banks being sued over the continued holding of Holocaust victims' bank accounts, and also working on behalf of German corporations being sued for their use of slave labor. Please note that Matthias Wissmann is also the treasurer of the CDU. And in For the Record program number 193, we took a look at the CDU funding scandal and the many overlaps with, among other institutions, in all likelihood, the Bormann Organization and also the French oil firm Totalfina ELF, one of whose subsidiaries, ELF Aquitaine, figures in the CDU funding scandal. Bringing up to date the French connection with the CDU funding scandal, research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Asian Post, which is Canada's Pacific Rim newspapers. This is the Asian Post of April 13th through 26th of the year 2000. This article is titled Filipina Maid Hunted in Money Scandal Probe, subtitled Investigators Search Manila for Maid Turned Sexy Businesswoman, unquote, in French political slush fund case. It reads in part as follows. European investigators on the trail of political slush funds allegedly involving former Chancellor, German Chancellor Helmut Kohl, and again he's from the CDU, have found themselves tracking two unlikely suspects, a former Filipina maid and her 73-year-old lover. The slush funds allegedly flowed from the French oil company ELF Aquitaine to Swiss banks to the Berlin office of Chancellor Kohl. A team of French detectives headed last month for the suburbs of Manila in search of the couple who they believe could help unlock the ELF Aquitaine affair, said a report in the Sunday Times of London. But by then, the two, Alfred Fred Sylvain, S-I-R-V-E-N, and Vilma Medina, M-E-D-I-N-A, had disappeared, leaving behind many unanswered questions. The French magazine Paris Match, in an investigative piece, honed in on Vilma Medina, 44, Sylvain's maid-turned-lover. Medina reportedly helped arrange his flight from Europe. According to the Sunday Times, investigators have established that she helped him obtain a fake Paraguayan passport and a visa for the Philippines. It was also Medina who allegedly organized transfers of funds between banks in Geneva, Frankfurt, Manila, and Hong Kong. And a sidebar to that story, the ELF Aquitaine affair, that's the title, it reads as follows. In 1992, French President François Mitterrand reportedly arranged for payment of 30 million Deutschmarks, 26 million Canadian dollars, to the German Christian Democrats to help Chancellor Helmut Kohl's re-election campaign. According to reports in the German and French media, the money was transferred as part of alleged bribes totaling 85 million Deutschmarks paid by the French oil company ELF Aquitaine for its 1992 purchase of the former East German Leuna refinery. By the way, the Leuna refinery in World War II was one of the central IG Farben, was the main IG Farben synthetic oil manufacturer for the Third Reich, and we'll update that in a future broadcast. Now, note the ELF Aquitaine, or now called Totalfina ELF. And note many things here. First of all, as we looked at in Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, a miscellaneous archive show, François Mitterrand himself has a fascist background. Prior to and during the early stages of World War II, he worked with the French fascist organizations, the Cagoule and the Croix de Feu. We'll also note the role of ELF as a sort of a state-owned oil monopoly in France, and also a cover not only for the paying of political bribes, but also for intelligence matters. The following is from the Financial Times of February 3rd and February 4th of the year 2001. This is an article by Bertrand Benoit, B-E-N-O-I-T. It's titled, Light Shed on an Extraordinary Past. Insiders allege, subtitled, Insiders allege 25 billion French francs had been lost through poor management, but Sylvain's arrest may lead to further revelations, writes Bertrand Benoit. And speaking of the arrest in the Philippines of Alfred Sylvain, who has now been arrested, skipping down, yet, while the ELF Aquitaine affair has yet to reveal all its secrets, the investigators have already shed light on the oil company's extraordinary past as a covert diplomatic arm of the French government and a channel for illicit funds. Founded in 1967, ELF was born from a merger of various oil prospecting bureaus set up by the French government in the 1930s with a view to securing independent energy resources for the country. Pierre Guillaumat, head of the main prospecting bureau created after the war, is credited with persuading General Charles de Gaulle, president at the time, of the benefits of creating a state-controlled oil giant. A former engineer, Mr. Guillaumat was also General de Gaulle's chief intelligence officer and a member of the London-based government in exile during the war. Presiding over ELF's destiny until 1977, he turned it into an oil ministry in a corporate guise. Skipping down. Still clouded in mystery, however, are the so-called retro bonuses, unquote, money paid to intermediaries that found its way back into France. It is through such means that ELF is alleged to have acted as a funding pump for France's right-wing parties until the appointment of Mr. Le Floch in 1989. That's capital L-E, capital F-L-O-C-H. Skipping down. Mr. Le Floch's tenure with Mr. Servin, again recently arrested in the Philippines, as his second-in-command, also coincided with the signature of the very deals that would capture the attention of the French Justice Department. These included the expensive acquisition of the East German refinery of Leuna, L-E-U-N-A, in 1992, thought to be linked to the illegal funding of German political parties. If, as alleged, ELF played an intermediary role between the Taiwanese military and French arms group Thomasson CSF, now TAL, T-H-A-L-E-S, offering to lobby then-French Foreign Minister Roland Dumas through Mr. Dumas' lover and ELF employee Christine Devier-Jeancourt, it only served to demonstrate its unofficial diplomatic role. And skipping down, of the ultimate fate of ELF, and this will dovetail with a major point of information which we'll take up either later in this program or in an upcoming program, the company barely outlived its controversial chairman. Engulfed in a ballooning scandal, it succumbed to a hostile bid from rival Totalfina in 1999. It's now Totalfina ELF. Now, the CDU funding scandal has more connections than a switchboard, and in an upcoming broadcast to be done next week, we're going to connect many of these dots and review many of the many complex elements of overlap between this and other areas of investigation. But what we're going to do now is to review a section from For the Record Program 193 talking about the many, many connections of the CDU funding scandal, and bear in mind that the treasurer of the CDU is Matthias Wismann. There was a very long and extremely detailed article in the New York Times about this funding scandal. This is from the New York Times of Monday, February 7th of the year 2000. This article was jointly authored by Roger Cohen and John Taliabue, T-A-G-L-I-A-B-U-E. It statelined Berlin February 6th and headlined, Big Kickbacks Under Kohl Reported. Subheaded, Investigators Estimate $70 million Was Paid in Official Sales. Skipping down. About the sale of the refinery and an arms deal for some tanks that were sold to Saudi Arabia. Those tanks, by the way, manufactured by the Thyssen Heavy Industrial Group, which, as we'll see later, figures in the refinery situation as well. The Thyssen Group is one of the central elements in the Bormann organization that I just alluded to. This also suggests further that the Bormann Group was, and the Underground Reich, figures in a prominent way in this particular scandal, and perhaps it's breaking, as we will see. Skipping down of the tank sale. The investigation of the tank sale and the oil refinery are not related to separate investigations into the millions of dollars in political contributions that Mr. Cole and his party, the Christian Democratic Union, have admitted receiving secretly during his rule. But their political implications appear broad. Prosecutors have identified three beneficiaries of the kickbacks. Mr. Falls, that's P-F-A-H-L-S, and we're going to talk more about him, who was the former head of Germany's domestic intelligence services, Pierre Letier, L-E-T-H-I-E-R, the former chief of staff of two heads of the French external security services, and Dieter Holzer, H-O-L-Z-E-R, a businessman with known links to German intelligence. What prosecutors do not as yet know is whether those men channeled some of the money to Mr. Cole's Christian Democrats. The files relating to the ELF sale have disappeared from the chancellery, and last week, Mr. Cole's successor, the Social Democrat Gerhard Schroeder, announced a formal investigation into the disappearance. So note again the indications of a cover-up. First of all, Helmut Kohl himself has been quite openly stonewalling. The fellow who was in charge of the party finances, Mr. Hewlin in Hesse, has turned up among the dead. An alleged suicide, but who knows for sure whether it really was a suicide. Certainly when situations like this begin to manifest themselves, the possibility that it may not have been a suicide is one that has to be very seriously considered. I would also note that many of these individuals here have above-board ties to the intelligence agencies of various countries. First, the aforementioned Mr. Falls, Ludwig Holger Falls, P-F-A-H-L-A-L-S, is described here as the head of Germany's domestic intelligence services. That, from this description, would appear to be the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic intelligence service in charge with seeing to it that the Constitution was protected and that Nazism did not return to Germany. Note that the French contact in some of these dealings, Mr. Pierre Letier, is the former chief of staff of two heads of the French external and security services, and that Dieter Holzer, a businessman involved with these machinations, has known links to German intelligence. More about the tank deal, and this was a sale of some tanks to Saudi Arabia that was apparently pushed for by the Bush administration, according to some of the people involved in it. Skipping down in this story, the investigation of the sale of 36 Fuchs Spurpanzer tanks by Thyssen Industry to the Saudis began 5 years ago when Giorgio Pelosi and Karlheinz Schreiber, a prominent German-Canadian arms broker, had a falling out, and Mr. Pelosi decided to talk to investigators. By the way, his last name, P-E-L-O-S-S-I. More recently, he, that alludes to Pelosi, was arrested in connection with Italian drug trafficking charges and is being held in a federal facility in Chicago, according to the United States Attorney's Office there. Mr. Pelosi has said he wants to fight the charges in Italy, where he expects to return. After Mr. Pelosi talked with German investigators, a search of Mr. Schreiber's home revealed diaries and other documents that appeared to chronicle his role in the tank sale and pointed to Mr. Falls. Again, that's P-F-A-H-L-S. Now, note here that this tank sale was the sale of tanks from Thyssen Industries. The Thyssen Group is one of the major cogs, not only in German heavy industry, but also in the aforementioned Bormann organization. And so certainly, although in this context it is no more than an arms manufacturer, it certainly is something that needs to be very seriously considered in the context of this particular scandal and the investigations into it. Again, with the Paraguay connections, with the money flowing from secret accounts in Zurich and Liechtenstein, and now with Thyssen Heavy Industry being involved, and also Thyssen Heavy Industries, being involved, and with all these numerous individuals with ties to German and French intelligence, not only would this appear to be an intelligence, well, certainly it more than appears to be an intelligence-related scandal, but certainly one wants to be looking for connections to the aforementioned Bormann Group. One of the interesting things about this scandal, too, is the number of financial fronts through which monies flowed in order to get to ultimate, relatively mysterious destinations. Skipping down still further in this New York Times article from 2000, On December 24, 1992, as first revealed by Le Monde, ELF paid 256 million francs, or $39 million, to an account at Handelsfinance CCF Bank in Geneva, controlled by a mailbox company called Nobelpack S.A. That money was then divided between Mr. Letier, a top official in the French External Security Services until the late 1980s, and Mr. Holzer, the German businessman with links to his country's security services, Swiss prosecutors say. Mr. Holzer now lives in Monaco and could not be reached for comment. He has issued a notarized statement saying he had not given any of the money to political parties. Mr. Letier lives in Geneva. A call to his house was not returned. Nobelpack, the Swiss company through which the money moved, is controlled by André Guelfi, G-U-E-L-F-I, a Swiss-based French businessman. Formally, he was remunerated as a, quote, consultant, unquote. But he has openly suggested, and note this next sentence beginning again, but he has openly suggested that he was no more than a vehicle through which to disguise the real beneficiaries of the refinery deal. Quote, I put my offshore company at the disposition of ELF, which sent a lot of money, unquote, Mr. Guelfi told Le Monde, again quoting, then I passed the money to the accounts I was given. Voila. Calls to Nobelpack for this article were not answered. So note the mysterious flow of monies here, and that the individuals involved in this mysterious flow of monies through corporate fronts in various countries have connections to the various countries' intelligence services. Again, Mr. Letier, Mr. Holzer, and Mr. Falls all have very strong intelligence connections. Note Nobelpack and some of these other corporate fronts here. There is a dizzying tangle of intersecting institutions, and I'm going to enumerate those briefly after reading one more section of this particular article. Bernard Gorny, G-O-R-N-Y, Mr. Guillon's lawyer, declined to comment. On the same day that Nobelpack received the money in 1992, it wired 220 million francs, or $33.8 million, to a company registered in Liechtenstein called Standby Establishment, and the remaining $5.2 million to the Swiss account of a company called Showfast Limited. Swiss prosecutors say both companies appeared to be controlled by Mr. Letier and Mr. Holzer, who have not denied receiving the sums. The money was later moved, at least in part, to Liechtenstein foundations. Paul Perraudin, a Geneva prosecutor, has told Le Monde that one foundation, Delta International, is believed to be a front for Mr. Holzer's activities. Another, Foundation Thais, T-H-A-I-S, is thought to be a front for Mr. Letier. Some of these accounts were frozen in January. Swiss and French prosecutors believe that Mr. Guelfi received more than $4 million for his services. Those included a second use of this company in 1993 with a payment of over $20 million by Thiessen in connection with its partnership with ELF in certain projects at Leuna. Mr. Guelfi justified the payment, bringing total commissions paid to about $60 million by producing false, quote, feasibility studies, unquote. At the groundbreaking ceremony for the new Leuna refinery in 1994, Mr. Cole called it, quote, the most important Franco-German industrial project since World War II, unquote. He did not explain why. So again, note this dizzying tangle of corporate fronts. Note also that in addition to being the company that manufactured the tanks in this Saudi Arabian tank deal that is one of the sources of these mysterious monies, note also that Thiessen apparently was involved with certain projects with ELF at the Leuna refinery. So again, the Thiessen Group, not only one of the main elements in German heavy industry, but one of the central tiles, so to speak, in the mosaic of the Bormann organization, figures in both the tank and the ELF refinery deal at Leuna. That again from For the Record program number 193. Now, we're going to be taking up the CDU funding scandal at considerable length in the future. One of the very important things to consider is the possibility of the use of Mr. Servin as an element of political leverage and blackmail. Financial Times of London, front page, February 3rd and February 4th of 2001, article by Raphael Minder and David Owen and Hugh Williamson in Manila, headline, Star Witness in French Corruption Trial Arrested. Note where Mr. Servin stopped off on his way back to France. Alfred Servin, a 74-year-old former executive of ERF Aquitaine, the once state-owned French oil company, was due to land at Frankfurt at 5:45 a.m. He was expected to be transferred immediately to Paris by a French government aircraft. That transfer was slightly delayed, creating great anxiety in Paris. The reason for that? Also from the Financial Times of February 3rd and February 4th of 2001, this is by Raphael Minder in Paris, headlined, Servin Set to Unpack Explosive Evidence. The lead paragraph? Before Alfred Servin set off on what turned out to be a four-year flight from French justice, he warned that he knew enough secrets to, quote, make the Republic blow up 20 times, unquote. France may soon find out what he had in mind. And perhaps that's just what the Germans had in mind, because they are in need of a little bit of leverage. Reviewing a short item from For the Record program number 274, and we're going to be going into this at greater length in the future. This is from The Scotsman of January 26th of 2001, accessed from thescotsman.co.uk. Headline, Schroeder launches Brussels offensive. Germany, plowing ahead with plans to strip EU members of sovereign decision-making, will throw its weight behind federalist plans at the Strasbourg summit with France in a week's time. And as we noted in For the Record program number 274, skipping down, the weekend think tank in Berlin was hosted by the Bertelsmann Foundation. And note also that this is coinciding with plans to tighten control of the Eurogroup and the European Monetary Union. Financial Times of 2001, article by Peter Norman in Brussels, headlined, Moves Afoot to Overhaul the Eurogroup. And, skipping down in this story, we read, A banner headline in one Brussels newspaper claimed Didier Reinders, the Belgian finance minister who chairs the Eurogroup this year, is seeking, quote, radical reforms in the political management of the group. Skipping down, their aim, the report said, was to strengthen the policymaking and political muscle of the Eurogroup in a move that could sharply reduce the influence of the non-Euro countries, Britain, Sweden, and Denmark, and the national central banks of the EU. By the way, I would add parenthetically, thereby realizing the plans laid down by Friedrich Liest for German world domination through a central European economic union dominated by Germany. Now note that the think tank was run by Bertelsmann, as we discussed in 274, and we will be taking these up next week. In 275, we noted a recent deal between Bertelsmann and GBL of Belgium. This is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, February 6th of 2001, reviewing an article by Dan Bilewski in Brussels, Global GBL Falls for Bertelsmann's Charms. And note who GBL is overlapped with. Skipping down, GBL, which is jointly controlled with Paul Desmarais, the French-Canadian head of Power Corporation, has often used its Belgian assets to invest in groups such as French oil giant Totalfina ELF, and French utility Suez-Lyonnais Des Eaux. And another topic for discussion in the not-too-distant future, like next week, this from the Financial Times of Thursday, February 15th of the year 2001, we noted a recent Bertelsmann publication of a book about IBM's involvement with the Third Reich, noting Matthias Wismann's involvement with Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, and their involvement handling Holocaust-related lawsuits and Third Reich-related lawsuits. This article by Richard Wolff and John Outers, A-U-T-H-E-R-S, IBM legal bombshell threatens landmark Holocaust deal. Skipping down. After this week's filing of a new lawsuit against IBM alleging complicity in the Holocaust, the landmark deal is now threatened with a critical loss of public confidence. Skipping down. Several people on the German side of the negotiations believe that the new suit against IBM breaches this requirement, opening the possibility they will refuse to pay. To be continued next week. For a detailed synopsis and annotated synopsis of For the Record program number 276, check the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. And for real audio archives of these broadcasts, check wfmu.org/daveemory. That concludes For the Record program number 276. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.